Eberflus wants to be aggressive here. Caleb Williams wants to. Look at this.
Yeah, he likes it. There to go.
He was yelling for the call.
I like it.
Fourth down. Pressure. Williams throws it. Complete. Johnson for a first down. Down to 15. Caleb Williams begs his coach to go for it. He trusts him, and he delivered. Fourth and three. Game on the line. Williams lofting one for a dude. He caught it. First down. Here we go. 46 yards. Break for Caleb Williams.
How's it going, everybody? I'm all right. Tough loss, but I'm all right.
And now it's time for Judson Richards on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Live in Chicago, just after 6 o'clock. Judson Richards with you until just before 8 o'clock. DePaul basketball will take over. Again, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios. Brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. We are talking Bears. We're doing it now. 312-644-6767. An incredible open there by Robbie Chirano. Robbie, great job to get us started this evening. Well done. Although it stung a bit to relive that. And again, we'll take your phone calls. 312-644-6767. A great show lined up tonight. Eric Edholm of NFL.com will join us at 625. Who do we expect to be the hottest coaches when it comes to coaching vacancies and filling those roles? We'll do that coming up in just under 25 minutes. Also, Patrick Finley of the Chicago Sun-Times. Can we put Matt Eberflus on the hot seat? We will ask Patrick coming up at 7 o'clock. So, this past week, boy, it was something. I will say, Sunday against the Packers, the best performance, the brightest performance, for me, it has to be new offensive coordinator Thomas Brown. As the saying goes, stay ready so you don't have to get ready, right? You feel like throughout the season, Brown may have had in the back of his mind, if I get a chance, this is what I would do with this Bears offense. And sure enough, stay ready so you don't have to get ready. Brown implemented it, and I'll give Caleb Williams credit because the last few weeks has been so much about how do we get Caleb Williams back on track to allow the young rookie quarterback to grow, to improve, to get better, to become the quarterback that we want him to be done. I thought that Brown did a great job. I thought that Caleb Williams was back on track. And overall, finally, for the first time in a couple of games, the Bears offense gave themselves a chance to win. And they did all of it through so much turmoil last week, right? The firing of offense coordinator Shane Waldron, the finger pointing is abundant. The finger pointing is blatant with this group. It was happening at Hallis Hall, and the Bears were able to put something together offensively. But perhaps the overlying theme of last week, and even the last few weeks, the one that I have heard the loudest, it felt a little bit like the entire NFL world felt that the Bears are ruining Caleb Williams. The Bears are failing their young rookie quarterback. It honestly felt like the NFL world was taking pity on Caleb Williams, and that didn't sit well with me because greatness should have no time for victimhood. And it felt like we were heading down that path with Caleb Williams and the Bears. Now, have they done a great job to put him in a place to succeed? I think we know the answer to that question. Hiring Shane Waldron was a tremendous miss for the Bears. Even keeping Matt Eberflus, retaining him last offseason with as many potential other NFL head coaches, Jim Harbaugh to name one, was going to be available. So the Bears have not done a great job to put Caleb Williams in a place to succeed. And as I continue to tell you, this is three consecutive Tuesdays, I'll do it yet again, that I believe in Caleb Williams. I believe that he can be the quarterback that we want him to become in Chicago. But whoever is going to be the guy to take the torch and turn the page on the history of woeful quarterback play that we have watched for decades in Chicago, whoever that is going to be, they're going to have to overcome something, right? They're going to have to rise above something. Because let's be perfectly honest with ourselves. We are not guaranteed that when Matt Eberflus leaves, if and when, we're not guaranteed that the next hire is going to be the absolute best hire. Whoever the 2025 offensive coordinator is for the Bears, it is not a guarantee that he is going to be ultimately the best, brightest offensive mind that is available. And I think so badly we want perfection to surround Caleb Williams. We want this perfect scenario to be around Caleb Williams, and it's not realistic. We want the great head coach. We want the best offensive coordinator. We want a perfect offensive line. We want the smartest general manager, right? We want a top five defense year in, year out to set up the quarterback for success. Those things just are not realistic. In fact, it's not realistic really for 32 NFL teams, let alone what's happening here in Chicago. Now, Tom Brady was on the call for Fox on Sunday. Thought Tom did a nice job. He's gotten a lot better since I really listened to him the most back in week one. And Caleb Williams has talked about Tom Brady before. It was before the season began. It was before his NFL career began. This is what Caleb Williams said on the Pivot podcast about when he was coming to Chicago.
Now that I want to play at one place for 20 years and chase one guy, number 12, I want a place that loves ball. You know, that's all I've heard about Chicago so far.
Boy, those are some lofty goals that Caleb Williams set for himself, and I would venture to guess that he would not utter those again now that he knows a little bit of what it's like to be in the NFL. But since Caleb brought up Tom Brady, right, since Caleb mentioned his name, and that's where he is setting the bar. If you recall, Tom Brady had four offensive coordinators, and that's not many for how long as he played, and I think we know why. But Tom Brady had four offensive coordinators that I can count. Charlie Weiss, Bill O'Brien, Josh McDaniels, Byron Leftwich. How many of those guys went on to have incredible success in the NFL without Tom Brady? Did any of those guys scheme so perfectly, so beautifully, that is why Tom Brady went on to win seven Super Bowls? Charlie Weiss is in the media right now. Last I heard from Josh McDaniels, he was sitting on Colin Cowherd's couch talking about Tom Brady. So he's in the media after being fired by the Raiders. Bill O'Brien's got a head coach, I believe, Boston College. That's a good job. I can't think of any success that Bill O'Brien had without Tom Brady. And Byron Leftwich, I don't think, has a job right now. And that's a guy who was an offensive coordinator, Super Bowl winner with Tampa Bay, but it was also with Tom Brady. And I know what you're going to say. But Tom Brady had Bill Belichick. The Patriots were 5-11 before Brady took over. Bill Belichick then went under 500 with his record once Tom Brady left, and he's doing what now? Well, that's right. Bill Belichick is working in the media. Now, it is an extreme example to use Tom Brady's name when talking about Caleb Williams, although Caleb brought it up. But revisionist history tells us that Tom Brady just made everyone better around him. That is what the great ones do. And just like I said last week, if you think Shane Waldron somehow ruined the career of Caleb Williams, then you don't think much of Caleb Williams. Now, Caleb is far too young to put any sort of Tom Brady expectations on his shoulders. But I will tell you this, it is a what have you done for me lately. The expectations will only rise for Caleb Williams. It's going to be a sooner rather than later type of thing for him. And if the Bears are going to be great, it's going to be because of two things. It's going to be, number one, because Caleb Williams is heading in that direction and he ultimately becomes great. And it's a big and he will need to be great in spite of the shortcomings of the organization. 312-644-6767. Here's a question we'd like to ask you when it comes to the callers out there. What confirmation did you have coming out of this Packers-Bears game? And I would ask you to dig a little bit deeper than Matt Eberflus can coach in a one-score game and that Eberflus needs to go. I would ask you just to dig a little bit deeper. What confirmations do you have coming out of that Bears-Packers game on Sunday? Robbie, you had the, I don't want to call it a pleasure, you had the dubious honor to be at Soldier Field to watch the blocked 46-yard field goal.
I did. I was in section 444, so I was a little far back, but I got to see everything. My first time in Soldier Field, beautiful. I would say it was football weather. There was no excuses weather. Beautiful outside, no wind whatsoever. And after that game, I learned a lot about Caleb Williams, about what he can do right. And then I learned what it truly means to lose to the Green Bay Packers
right,
like that.
Right.
I've never seen more sad Bears fans in my entire life.
Now you are well-traveled, right? So from Detroit, you've lived in Washington. So you've I'm assuming you've been to a number of NFL stadiums throughout your life?
Correct. The ones I've gone to the most are the ones in Washington with the Commanders and at Ford Field.
Okay,
this is my first time at Soldier Field.
What'd you think?
Beautiful.
Yeah.
On the lake, gorgeous. I don't know why we want to build a new one. This one rocks.
Oh, boy.
No, but it was...
That isn't your confirmation, is it? That 61,000 seats, turns out it is enough for the third largest city?
And for the festivities with Devin Hester and being at the Packers game, it was such an amazing environment. And I was surrounded by Packers and Bears fans, but when that kick happened, you saw all the Packers fans lose their mind, and you saw about 50,000 Bears fans collectively sit down and... lose themselves.
Complete devastation. You felt it?
You could feel the energy of the room just completely sink.
What was that walk of shame like, leaving Soldier Field after that blocked field goal?
Well, the thing is contrasting it with what was happening right before. Because when they start marching down the field and they get that pass to Keenan Allen, every single Bears fan in there was like, we have this in the bag. As if they forgot all history of what's happened every time they play the Green Bay Packers, which is most of the time a fat OL and probably a fat OL in a really terrible way.
This one probably had to feel a little bit like a punch in the face, like you were walking out utterly dazed to go from that roller coaster, that emotion of a 46-yard field goal. Caleb Williams should have his second game-winning drive of his young career after the Washington game and this game here. And instead, the Packers did it to you again. 312-644-6767. Robbie, we'll get your confirmation coming out of this game. What were you confirmed? What was confirmed to you about the Bears-Packers? I've got one. Jordan Love is not Aaron Rodgers. That was confirmed to me on Sunday. And again, that may be an obvious statement, but if you watch the back half of Jordan Love's year last year, and even going deep into the playoffs and that team coming very, very close to going to an NFC championship game, you had to be thinking, oh God, here we go again. Here we go again with the quarterback play from the Packers. But the biggest difference, and we watched it play out in this game, the biggest difference between Aaron Rodgers at his peak and Jordan Love, Jordan will give it up. What was so devastating about Aaron Rodgers wasn't just the accuracy and the ability, right, to throw accurate throws on the run, on the move, and the amount of touchdown passes he threw throughout his career. But Aaron Rodgers would not turn the football over. 12 of his 15 years in Green Bay, he had single-digit interceptions. And the years that he did have double-digit interceptions, one was the first year he played full-time, and one was the last year where he was injured and playing hurt and did not look like himself. 12 of the 15 years Aaron Rodgers was in Green Bay, he had single-digit interceptions. And some of it was like 5-6 interceptions combined with 30-plus touchdowns year in and year out. That is not who Jordan Love is. Jordan has double-digit interceptions his first 2 years. He has 11 picks through 8 games. And the one that he just threw, the one that he threw on Sunday in the end zone, Aaron Rodgers would never, ever, ever do that at his peak. So I felt like if we could take anything positive from it, was ultimately Jordan Love does not look like he's going to be a killer like Aaron Rodgers was with his peak at Green Bay. Now, on the flip side of that, you got a real problem when it comes to Matt LaFleur. That problem isn't going away anytime soon. The Packers had the youngest roster last year. Almost got to the NFC Championship game. They have the youngest roster again this year. They have an incredible coaching staff. It played out in real time. I feel like somehow Matt LaFleur knew the trajectory of the kicks of Cairo Santos, right? The trajectory from 46 yards, which was going to have much less loft than it did if he were in the 30s. You feel somehow like Matt LaFleur was far more aware of the trajectory of Cairo Santos than Matt Eberflus did of his own kicker. 312-644-6767. Robbie, why don't we let Parker hit lead off here? Parker will get us started this evening. Hey, Parker from calling us from Joliet. What's going on, Parker?
Hey, guys. So I just couldn't help but feel anguish watching after the Bears game, watching the Sunday night game, Bengals-Chargers, and just thinking what it would have been like if the Bears even gave Jim Harbaugh a chance at head coach, because looking at their last possession in that game, they decided to run the ball, even though they didn't really have to, handed it off to J.K. Dobbins. He runs down, scores a 16-yard touchdown, puts them up ahead. Then the Bengals come back with their last drive going into Hail Mary mode. And guess what Jim Harbaugh does? He calls a timeout to make sure his defense is all in the right spots. Everyone's on the same page. And they ended up coming off with a win. So just makes me think. It's brutal. Parker, have a good night, guys.
Parker, thanks for the call. One of the interesting things about Jim Harbaugh going to the Chargers is the Chargers really are a famously cheap organization. But they put up the money. They put up the $16 million a year. I believe there's only three NFL head coaches that are making more than Jim Harbaugh. And I don't know if that's because they're only paying a dollar a year rent there at that stadium in Los Angeles, but they put up the money for the head coach, and you just wonder, when it comes to whoever the most popular candidate is, will the Bears be willing to put up or shut up when it comes to spending for the next head coach? 312-644-6767. Cindy is with us in Elburn. Hey, Cindy, what's going on?
I just can't believe that the McCaskies, the ownership of a $6.4 billion football club, they let Coach Eberflus go out there each week. Each media press conference just gets worse. I'm embarrassed for him. I just want to scream, get him off of there. Thomas Brown is the real deal. And can we please bring some hope back to this team? This team has such historical significance in our state, and it's just hurting too much.
Cindy, thanks for the call. Yeah, those Eberflus press conferences, that's a tough listen. Those are a very, very difficult listen. Let's go to Kyle in River Forest. Hey, Kyle, what's going on?
Yeah, first time caller, excited to be on the show. Just wanted to talk about the confirmation that you had on the game. You know, I think Jordan Love is a killer, and he showed that last year, and I think he's been hurt all year. You know, I don't love to say that, but I think my biggest confirmation from that game was Caleb Williams looked really good, and he looked like a brand new quarterback with an OC for less than a week. You know, I think Bears fans should be really, like, that's the big confirmation from that game, is that Caleb Williams balled out that game.
Kyle, thanks for the phone call. He certainly did. You know, we got a chance to see, because one of the biggest issues with Shane Waldron was, what direction is this heading, right? I mean, how far down the drain is Caleb Williams going to go from that great three-game stretch to the most recent three-game stretch before what we saw against the Packers? Thomas Brown was able to right the ship. Kurt Warner does a great job. Spiegel Holmes, this is what he had to say about what he saw from Caleb.
I thought it was the most comfortable that I saw Caleb play. And by that, you know, you saw the runs. You saw, you know, the quick decisions to, oh, I don't like the read, I'm going to go create and play and play fluid and play fast. And so that was definitely something that I saw different for Caleb. Now the question I ask is, why was that the case? Because it wasn't different plays. You know, it wasn't things that he hadn't been running all year. Why was he more fluid?
Yeah, that was Kurt Warner with the guys. Again, find it on the Odyssey app. Eric Edholm, NFL.com, will join us coming up in just about 6 minutes. We'll ask him about who are the most popular coaches heading into this offseason. There's a chance you can have 7, 8, 9 NFL head coaching vacancies. It was great to see Caleb Williams, just from the simplest of standpoints, it was great to see him with confidence back out on the field. And if it took his legs to do that, then that's what you wanted to see from Caleb, right? It felt very much like Thomas Brown said to him, one or two reads, if it's not there, go ahead and use your legs. And when we're speaking of confirmations, I felt very good. Typically, I do not like when quarterbacks are running that often. But Caleb has such a great feel for the game. I don't remember one hard hit that he took at all. He either got out of bounds, he either slides, and he slides properly where he gets his entire body down low so he doesn't get hit. But I thought that his use of his legs not only allowed him to grow confidence, and it seems to match up in his accuracy, but now Brian Flores with the Minnesota Vikings will have something else to take a look at. Robbie, you were there, right? What confirmations for you?
Yeah, one of them was, I think Caleb Williams does have that kind of it factor to him. We saw at the end of the Commanders game, he goes down and gets a touchdown. in a clutch situation, you could count on Caleb Williams. He has that. And also, hello, DJ Moore. Hello, Keenan Allen. Hello, DeAndre Swift. The Bears have dudes, and now they're finally using them the proper way. Brown said he wanted to give the ball to his playmakers more. He did that. So confirmation, the Bears have dudes, and Caleb Williams has it for me.
He certainly does. I think we saw it, and it was great to see him get back on track to become the quarterback that we want to see. Eric Edholm of NFL.com will join us next. Who will be the most sought-after head coach this offseason? We'll ask him coming up on 6-7 of the Score.
Does the result change anything for you as far as going forward? Would you do the same thing again in a similar situation?
Yeah, I mean, where the conditions were and where we were in the game, I would say, yeah, I would do the same. I mean, would you like to be closer? Yeah, sure. You'd like it to be at the 15-yard line, but it is where it is.
We're back with more Judson Richards on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
DePaul basketball coming up in just about 90 minutes on The Score. Joining us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline is NFL.com's Eric Edholm. Download the Circa Sports app today. Eric, thanks for your time this evening. How are you?
Doing well. What's going on?
The 4-6 Bears, Eric, what's the national perspective of this team?
Yeah, I mean, I think there was probably rightfully so a little bit of suspicion, you know, going into the bye week as far as who they'd face. Now, looking back, obviously the Rams are looking like a pretty good opponent. They were going through some things at the time, but you know, that record looked pretty nice. It was a tough division. I think everybody recognized that at that point. And the Bears were probably viewed as the best fourth place team with a chance to move up. But you know, I think it's also fair to say that it was not expected that they would fall back as far as they did, or at least, you know, coming out of the gates the way they did. And you know, the result of it being a new coordinator, and you know, how we've gotten to this this place of four straight losses.
Is there a department at NFL.com that gets to declare a coach on the hot seat? Like, do we know exactly how that works? I feel like it's a little bit like Michael Scott declaring bankruptcy. Is Eberflus there?
Yeah, it's a little bit like the Colonel's 13 spices. I can't give you the exact you know, formula there, but I could do my best now. But you know, obviously we have insiders. You know, I mean, Ian Rappaport, Tom Pelissero, Mike Garofalo do a lot of work and a lot of calls on these guys. And you know, there's a danger in saying a guy's on the hot seat too soon, because look at Eberflus last year. You know, look at you know, a few other teams that were not looking so good, and then all of a sudden find themselves in the playoffs. So, you know, we assumed after the Jaguars lost by, I don't know, 144 or something like that on Sunday, that Doug Peterson could be given some news on Monday. That didn't happen, you know, so sometimes you have to really crack into the brain of one person when it comes down to it. And that's often the owner. So, you know, these decisions are not easy. A lot of teams don't like to do it in season, obviously, for what that's worth. I don't know. But, yeah, that's kind of how it sometimes goes. And it gets, you know, obviously a lot tougher as the season goes on. And a lot of these guys really are fighting for jobs.
Eric Edholm, NFL.com, with us on 6-7 The Score. Eric, who do you think will be the top three sought-after head coaches this offseason?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be obviously some of the veteran names are you know, fascinating from just a reputation standpoint. And Bill Belichick is the most, you know, recognizable on that list. And it's got to be the right fit, right? I mean, that was kind of the issue this last coaching cycle when he and the Patriots didn't, you know, agree to keep going there. There was maybe one situation in Atlanta that was a possibility, but they liked Raheem. They knew him. They'd worked with him before, but now Bill's had a chance to kind of survey the scene. So, you know, would he be a candidate in Chicago? I don't think so. But, you know, there's certain teams out there that do make some sense. Dallas has obviously been mentioned. You know, it's going to be an interesting year for Mike Vrabel too. He's probably going to have his choice of jobs. I think it was a similar situation to Belichick where, you know, there were some opportunities he might have pursued, but he thought, let's wait. And, you know, you hear the talk, right? I mean, you could have, you know, almost a third of the league looking for new head coaches this offseason. You know, I don't know that the number is going to be 9, but it wouldn't shock me if it was. It's certainly going to be, you know, it's going to be bigger than last year. So that's kind of the interesting part of it. Does Brian Flores, who obviously you guys are going to see this weekend,
yeah,
does he get another opportunity? Maybe. You know, the two coordinators in Detroit, Ben Johnson, Aaron Glenn, both going to get hard looks. So there's a lot of, you know, a mix of candidates.
You know, there's been a number of times this year for the Bears where I just feel like the team, mainly verbally, has kind of run over their head coach in Matt Eberflus. And he can't really, I don't want to say control them, but he doesn't seem to have complete control. What sort of team will you think will be looking for a Mike Vrabel type?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, as you've kind of seen, you know, I know Vrabel's obviously a defensive player, but, you know, the characteristics of his Titans teams were often defense, run game, special teams. You know, it was a big sort of emphasis on those three sections, but, you know, they also had great skill players too. But, you know, that was kind of his defining characteristic was discipline, toughness, smart football acumen, you know, knowing how to know the rule book, like the Patriot way. You know, I'm sure there was a little influence there. And, you know, you've seen in the league, too, we're kind of cycling back towards the run game a little bit in this league as some young quarterbacks kind of struggle with their development as defenses get, you know, lighter and more defensive backs out there. You know, what you wonder why Derrick Henry's having a great year. It's a perfect fit for a unique offense, and he can run downhill. So that run game mentality is going to be a little more appealing now than it may have been 3-4 years ago. So, I don't think there's a team that wouldn't at least throw him up on the board and have a long chat about him if they have a vacancy this offseason.
Eric, you mentioned there could be a total of 9 vacancies this year with coaches being fired. Where do you think the Bears would fall in popularity of those 9? Would they be top 3? Would it be the best potential job out there because of Caleb Williams and really a pretty good roster?
Yeah, I mean, if you're asking, you know, where does this team rank on the list of possible availabilities, I mean, you know, I'd say it's in pretty good shape. Now, obviously, you know, some coaches want to have a quarterback in place. Some, you know, that's a good thing in their eyes. Okay, I can fix Caleb, right? That's going to be the selling point for a young offensive coordinator type. You know, some other people may view it differently and say, I want to draft my own guy, and he doesn't fit exactly what I want to do. And so, you know, again, it's a little bit of a puzzle piece thing, but if you're just sort of taking a big look, you know, again, it's always a little bit awkward for me to sort of say, all right, these are the definite openings, because I don't think we really, really know yet. But, yeah, if you just kind of look at the teams who are having rough years and have those coaches in kind of, you know, in that spot where they should be. And also we've had, you know, the same situation we know is already, you know, turned over. But I would say they're in the upper third of that group.
NFL.com's Eric Edholm with us on 6-7 The Score. Eric, I'm probably putting the cart before the horse, but I think the entire city is doing it just because of who they still have left on the schedule, right? They still have the Vikings twice, the Lions twice. They got the Packers again, this time in Green Bay. They still have Seattle. And, oh, by the way, they still have the San Francisco 49ers as well. It is the most difficult remaining schedule. And Matt Eberflus, who is really the worst in the NFL at one-score games, you wonder how could he ever put together enough of a run to remain the Bears head coach, at least be able to make sense of why he should still be around. But looking at the Vikings coming to town on Sunday, has Sam Darnold come down to earth a little bit recently?
Yeah, I thought he was actually pretty good on Sunday, you know, all things considered. I mean, it wasn't a prolific performance, but after the early quote-unquote fumble, it was really like a toss, you know. So it was one of those that on him and on the running back. He settled down and played pretty well, made some big throws. So, you know, over the last month or so, have we seen a downtick in his play from that kind of surprising beginning? Yes. You know, it's kind of the Sam Darnold experience that I thought we would get this year once we knew McCarthy was out with a ACL and said, all right, it's his show pretty much, you know, unless he just completely flops. And I figured there's going to be a hot streak, there's going to be a cold streak, and the question is, you know, is it good enough to get him in the playoffs, and will they maintain there? I mean, they're looking pretty good right now. I think he understands that, you know, he probably needs to make four or five big throws a game, and the rest he can play within the system, and it's a pretty good system. Kevin O'Connell's a great play caller, and he really helps Sam out a lot. But, yeah, I would say there are opportunities to take the ball away from him, to sack him, to kind of get him thinking a little bit.
Does Caleb Williams still have a chance to earn Offensive Rookie of the Year?
Good question. I think it would take, obviously, and if he and Thomas Brown are more in sync the way they were Sunday going forward, I think there's a chance. You know, obviously he hasn't thrown a touchdown pass in a month or whatever. So statistically right now he's behind really the other three guys. You know, Drake May has played pretty darn well. He doesn't have the body of work, the number of games, but he's looked for good. I've been impressed with what I've seen from him. Bo Nix is obviously very steady. You know, he had a career game Sunday. It's not going to be like that every week. Jaden Daniels had the really hot start and has kind of cooled off with the rib injury and everything. So it's a fun race. I would say there's four guys in that race, but Caleb's got some work to do for sure.
Jets fired their general manager today. Aaron Rodgers next year, an NFL team or another darkness retreat?
I mean, he sent a lot of signals saying he wants to play, obviously, yeah. With, you know, a new GM there. I'm guessing that's probably not super realistic. But, you know, again, there's also talk about Woody Johnson, the owner, could go back to his role overseas. You know, Christopher Johnson, what does he think of Rodgers? What does he think of the next GM? I mean, there's so many, like, you know, it's the Jets. So there's a lot of drama and a lot of extra stuff that doesn't need to be there. But, yeah, I mean, it's
where,
not
where
there.
Could where could he go? Right. That's what I was going to say. I saw on the Twitterverse, which isn't a thing anymore, an Xverse just doesn't sound cool. But, you know, if Sam Darnold ends up getting paid by somebody else and J.J. McCarthy isn't necessarily ready yet, or if they don't want to run him out there yet because he hasn't gotten much time via injury, could we see Aaron Rodgers back in the NFC North?
Yeah, it's possible. You know, I hadn't even thought of it, to be honest. I think there's at least a sliver of sense to it, right? Especially if you know, Kevin O'Connell wants to feel confident about the position and have somebody with some experience. Obviously, somebody who knows the division well. You know, favorable conditions indoors. He's still going to have a good defense. We'll see what happens with Flores, obviously. But, you know, Justin Jefferson and you know, Hawkinson another year removed from ACL, his old buddy Aaron Jones. It would be fascinating, right? And wouldn't that be right up at Rodgers' alley? But I think he'd have to be realistic about the money, and I think he'd have to be realistic about his role. I mean, just knowing that McCarthy could beat him out, or that, you know, we have a plan here and you're here for a year and this guy's here for a lot longer.
Also, I would have to double check this, but Aaron Rodgers may be older than Kevin O'Connell. I don't know how many times.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah. You might be on to something that, you know, I know they're both younger than I am. That's, right. You know,
me too,
but yeah, it's, they might, yeah, right around each other. Yeah.
Yeah. Eric, last one, we'll let you go. Should we expect to see Deion Sanders on the sideline of an NFL team next year?
He says no. He says he likes it in Boulder.
I don't believe him. Do you believe him?
Look, they've built something unique. I think what Deion realistically could do is see what happens. Like, if they get into the playoffs and they win a game or, you know, whatever, something, you know, they build more, you know, hype for their program. Maybe he says this is too good here, or maybe gets more attention and, you know, a different offer comes in. The Dallas stuff is obviously fascinating, but, you know, I don't know if that's the right fit right now. We'll see. But yeah, I mean, when
I think of prime time, I don't think Boulder, Colorado.
Yeah, I know. I hear you. But man, they're trekking up to the mountains again. I mean, people wrote him off last year, and he's an interesting guy, you know, and he's doing something. He's coloring outside the lines, and I think everyone's kind of now peeking over and starting to realize, you know, maybe there is some genius here. You know, maybe there is something to what he's doing. Is he the perfect coach or whatever? Who knows? But I don't know. I don't know if the NFL's going to want that. Maybe they will. Maybe he's got offers. I don't know.
Well, the NFL, they just seem to deliver drama. And I don't know if there would be any better drama ever than a head coach in the NFL coaching his son the quarterback.
Right, right. And especially if he, you know, if you want to say, like, what's the Boulder, Colorado of the NFL, right? Not, you know what I mean? The equivalent of that would be a team like Jacksonville, right?
Yeah.
And bring the Florida swag or whatever. And you know, it just, he could light a fire under somewhere where he would just instant credibility from a fan standpoint, I think, and players maybe too. It would be fascinating.
Eric, good stuff. Thanks for your time tonight.
Have a great night, man.
See Eric at home, NFL.com. Now, there's a lot of major storylines. Again, offensive rookie of the year for Caleb Williams is still very much on the table. Now, he's got, again, he's got the most difficult schedule the rest of the way. But it doesn't mean, now that Shane Waldron is gone and Thomas Brown seems to have an ability to allow his quarterback to at least be respectable, right? And they got back to, and didn't hang 40 points on the Packers, but they got back to a level of respectability, and that was on a short week for Thomas Brown. I mean, I could not be more impressed for a new offensive coordinator on a short week for a team that had averaged 9 points over the last three games per game. The Bears, through the entirety of the season, were averaging 1.1 points a quarter in the first quarter. 1.1. They played 9 games, and they scored 10 points in the first quarter. Last week, they scored 3. That's a lot better than 1.1. I'll be interested to see what they can do against the Vikings once Thomas Brown has a full week. Coming up next, did you hear the fair yet devastating line of questioning one of the Score's very own asked Matt Eberflus? You'll hear it coming up next.
We're back with more Judson Richards on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We've got a really great prize to give away. We'll do so in just a few minutes, so stick around for that. Speaking of sticking around, DePaul basketball coming up at 8 o'clock this evening. Also, Patrick Finley of the Chicago Sun-Times. He will join us in just about 10 minutes. Is that seat getting hotter for Matt Eberflus? We will ask Patrick again, and he'll be with us at 7 o'clock. So Shane Waldron was fired last week. You know, I love watching press conferences. Love may be a little strong. I enjoy watching press conferences, right? And Shane Waldron, watching him may have been the greatest confirmation that, yes, you at the podium is you in front of the room. When Keenan Allen said that he was too nice after he was let go, I mean, you talk about just a devastating comment to say about a coach, that you were just too nice. And when we watch Shane Waldron at the podium, you could kind of be like, how does that guy talk to a bunch of NFL football players, right? There was that viral video of him kind of shaking. His hands were shaking in the paper on the sidelines as he was calling in plays. And so it was very easy to go, yeah, he does seem like he was too nice. And so when I listen to Matt Eberflus and I'm trying to connect, how does this guy at the podium also connect with players in his room? Now it's really starting to make sense. Like, I don't feel bad saying, well, maybe I just don't really understand what's happening in the meeting room. No, listening to Shane Waldron was pretty much Shane Waldron in front of a bunch of NFL football players. And it sounds like Matt Eberflus may not have lost the team. It certainly feels like he's lost control, especially when it comes to one-run games. The Score's very own Mark Grody, he asked a fair question. It was also brutal in his delivery.
Matt, there were a lot of positives in this game, but that, as you know, the locker room was dejected afterwards, at least when we were in there, maybe as dejected as it's been all year. You know, Jalen Johnson called it kind of comical the way you guys have been losing some of these games, like heartbreak games, and Montez Sweat said things are happening that's never happened to him in his career. Is there more that you have to say this week other than we're looking ahead to the next game? I mean, does there have to be a little bit more? Because this is a dramatic loss.
Yeah, I would just say you got to do right. You know, you got to do right when it counts. And I think that we just got to keep doing that. You know, we got to do it together. And again, we got to coach better. We got to execute better. We got to do that better at a higher rate. And you know, you keep doing that, good things will happen. And again, I know we've lost 4 in a row. 2 of those have been, you know, heartbreakers. I understand that. But again, I told the guys this at the team meeting about mental toughness is at a premium right now. And you got to have mental toughness. You got to have confidence in your ability to get this thing done. And I believe in those guys in the room, in that team room today. And they all look me dead in the eye. We believe in each other.
I'm sorry. What the hell are you talking about? What was that response? You got to do right when it counts. I think that we just got to keep doing that. We got to do it together. What? And also, credit Mark Grody. He was able to sum up why Matt Eberflus should not have a job in like 11 seconds while also asking a question. A comical. Jalen Johnson called it comical. Montez Sweat said, a couple of these things that's just been happening this year, like it's never happened to me in my career. It's happening multiple times within a year. It's kind of crazy. This is what players are saying about the way that the operation is going throughout these games. I found myself thinking about Ryan Poles and his staff. These men and women spend literally thousands of hours to try to get 68 regular season quarters of football right. That's it. That is all they get. All of the meetings that they have, all of the travel that they have. Think about all the pro days and the combine. I mean, not just during the season, but their entire lives in the offseason, the amount of time they spend away from their families so this guy can make sure that this team is 4-6 instead of 6-4. Like, Grody summed it up. When your players are saying our operations are comical and our operations, for a guy who's played football as long as Montez Sweat, are kind of crazy, they are, you can hear the hammer hitting the nails on that coffin. Unless they just want to be cheap and bring them back. That's the only thing that I can make sense of. It's not right, but I can make sense of, we don't want to pay a guy to go away for that long, right? We don't want that much money left on his contract. But just know you're going to look incredibly foolish. Just know everyone is going to know that you don't want to spend the money to just pay him to go away. But Grody summed it up perfectly. That quickly, he asked a question by using what other players are saying that you just cannot have happen. You cannot be that poorly, that poor operation. See, now Eberflus has got me doing it. All I want to say is you got to do right when it counts, and I think that we just got to keep doing what we got to keep doing. We got to do it together. We got to do it better.
It's contagious.
Yeah, it's happening. It's happening. The operations throughout that game were so bad that these are the comments coming out of the locker room. And I don't think he can connect with his players. He certainly can't connect with us when we're listening to those press conferences. Can he connect with Patrick Finley, who is also asking some really tough questions during these press conferences? Patrick Finley of the Sun-Times will join us next.
We're back with more Judson Richards on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
DePaul basketball coming up in just about an hour on 670 The Score. Joining us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, Sun-Times Patrick Finley on the beat of the Bears. Download the Circa Sports app today. Patrick, well, that was a game on Sunday. You may be all too familiar with it, but it still may not hurt any less for these guys. What was that locker room like after that kind of a loss to the Packers?
You know, they played well up until the end. I mean, nobody was happy that they lost to the Packers, and in that sense, there was some real frustration. But I think it was different than the previous couple of weeks, or at least after the Arizona game and the New England game, where I think there was at least an acknowledgement that the offense was getting a little bit better. And big picture, these guys know it, you and I know it. The Bears are only going to go as far as their quarterback takes them. And the quarterback looked a little bit better the other day. You know, it's crushing. Yes, it's against the rival, and the way that it happened is ridiculous. But I do think that there was a little bit more optimism than I'd seen the previous couple of weeks.
Yeah, there was a level of respectability to the offense that you did not see really in the last, you know, the previous three games, although they had a great chance to win that game as well. New offense coordinator Thomas Brown, Patrick, I found it to be incredibly impressive. 19 points or not. He took over a team, an offense that looked lifeless, had a short week to do it, and put them in a good place to succeed. What impressed you the most about what Thomas Brown did?
Remember, he had a short week because Matt Eberflus didn't decide to fire Shane Waldron until Tuesday morning. So
right.
Some of that was,
by the way, Patrick,
yes.
Can I stop you? Did you see the report about that Eberflus didn't really want to fire Waldron initially? Have you been able to confirm that at all?
I did see the report. I don't know if that's true, but I know that they obviously were hoping this thing was going to work out. I mean, the reason he was so adamant before the Patriots game and saying, no, of course, we're not going to make a move. So I think everybody in that building, Matt included, hoped that they would figure it out against the Patriots, a team that wasn't very good. And then they'd be able to kind of hold everything together. Remember, having to fire his offense coordinator looks, you know, it makes Eberflus look bad, you know, maybe more so than Shane Waldron. So I think they were hoping it would work out. I do know that Matt was deliberate in his decision-making. You know, it probably took a little bit too long, but, you know, on some level, if you're going to fire a guy and take away his paycheck and or at least limit his future career options, I don't hate that you are deliberate and respectful about it. I just wish that Thomas Brown had an extra day to get ready.
Yeah. And so what impressed you the most about what Brown did?
The short dropbacks were good. He, you know, that's what he's good at. He's literally the worst quarterback in football when you're throwing for 20 yards or more. So what you want to do is you want to get the ball out quickly. You want to get the ball in the hands of your playmakers. You saw him do that with DJ Moore. DJ Moore took, you know, he took pop pass. He took a jet sweep. He caught, you know, screens from the slot. He caught passes. They were really creative in getting him the ball. And then in trying to establish that rapport that he has in practice with Roma Dunze, too. I mean, they did a good job of getting the ball out of his hand and getting it done with purpose. There are some little things there that Caleb really liked, and this is silly, but I promise you it matters. Thomas Brown got the play calls in faster. And that's something that Caleb was thrilled to have because they could get to the line of scrimmage and he could take his time. So, you know, some of these pretty obvious things, you know, you wonder why Shane Waldron couldn't fix them or why Matt Eberflus couldn't insist that Shane Waldron fix them in the last couple of weeks. But Thomas Brown sure found a way pretty quick.
What do you think the problem is with the deep ball? Because that certainly wasn't an obvious scouting flaw that we knew this about Caleb Williams coming in. In fact, you watched him be accurate on the deep ball in college. Any guesses there?
I think the offensive line hurts him. Yeah. I think, you know, obviously when it was a little more banged up the previous couple of weeks, it's really hard to get any real amount of time there. And I think some of it, too, is just, you know, he's got to play more football. And remember, when he's throwing deep, a lot of that is going to be, you know, off script. It's going to be when he slips out and he's looking downfield. And, you know, getting that connection with the receivers in a scramble drill situation takes time. And, you know, again, you know, we pick this guy apart for better and for worse every week. But, you know, he is, you know, when he went on the field Sunday, he was halfway through his rookie season. So as much as it feels like he's had a lot of experience at the NFL level, he hasn't. And I think the hope I know inside Hallis Hall is that deep ball gets better with time.
Yeah, and I think it will. I think that he is either too juiced or he's aiming it on the deep ball, because the ones that he's the most accurate is when he's throwing it the hardest.
Yeah, and there's some of that. The other thing, too, is remember, he hasn't turned the ball over. I'm sorry, he hasn't thrown an interception since London. That's a long time ago. And, you know, it's very clear that part of the game plan was trying to get him to protect the ball at all costs. Now, we could have a long conversation about whether it's better to let him cut it loose or better to keep in his head that interceptions are bad. I'm okay with interceptions being bad so long as it doesn't make you scared to go deep. And, you know, I think it's hard to trust your receivers when, you know, you have coaching in other ears saying, remember, don't throw an interception, whatever you do.
Patrick Finley, Chicago Sun-Times on the Beat of the Bears with us on 6-7 of the Score. What did you make of the amount of running that he did? It felt a little bit like me that Thomas Brown said to him, you go through a couple reads. If it's not there and you feel like you've got room, go ahead and go. But also don't get hit. Like, Caleb seems to be very, very good about making wise decisions, whether getting out of bounds or going down when he needs to.
He felt like somebody who had paid attention when Drake May played quarterback last week. And,
right.
You know, I don't think Drake May is going to be better than Caleb Williams. I know the Bears don't think that he's going to be better than Caleb Williams. But one thing he was really good at is, you know, he'd make that first read, usually to Hunter Henry, and then maybe he'd go to a second. And if it wasn't there, Drake May's getting the heck out of there and trying to do something with his feet. And I'm not sure that that's sustainable, big picture. But I think that it was something the Bears needed and something that I think it was more coincidental than necessarily a game plan point for Thomas Brown. But I think it's a weapon that they can use kind of until they get this pass game a little more figured out.
What's the most challenging question you've asked Matt Eberflus recently that you felt absolutely had to be asked?
Oh, my gosh. Boy, you're putting me on the spot now. I mean, you know, are you going to bench Tyrique Stevenson? It's a pretty good one. Are you going to fire your offensive coordinator? It's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
For the middle of the season, you know.
Do you get nervous when you do those these days, Patrick, or are you just, you know, are you just pro's pro and it doesn't even affect your heart rate?
I look at it this way, and this doesn't necessarily apply to the questions the last couple of weeks, but just kind of in general, is that, you know, in our business, there are people who are asked questions in press conferences because they want answers, and there are people who ask questions in press conferences because they want to get a reaction out of people. Yeah. I am very firmly in the I want answers camp. I think that the I want a reaction camp is performative and not necessarily getting at the heart of what we're all trying to get at the heart of. So I try and think of it like that. I try to phrase questions in a way that hopefully gets answers, and I try to be respectful. And I will say this about Eberflus. You know, he knows obviously what he's looking at here, and he has to deal with all of us, some of whom in the media room ask just questions than I do. But he's been really professional about it. You know, at no point has there been anything that seems personal coming back at us from him, and not all coaches have been like that over the years.
No, he takes the high road. I got to think that. I mean, someone pays a price. I don't know if it's his dog or someone at all. You know, maybe he's got a punching bag in the garage, because the questions are only getting tougher. But to be honest, he's set himself up for it with the way things have gone. He's got the worst record of one score games in the NFL, and their shortcomings operationally lead to those incredibly difficult questions that he has to answer. So I'll ask you one, and I think I'm probably too early to it, but when do we get to the hot seat question? I know that he's on the hot seat with fans. Is Matt Eberflus on the hot seat with the organization?
This is an organization that's never fired somebody in the middle of the season. I would think that something would have to happen that would make it abundantly clear that the team has quit in order for that to change. And I do ask this, and I understand that fans are upset and they're frustrated and that they want blood. They're fans. That's part of the job description when you're a fan, is when things go badly, you should be furious. But what is gained if you fire him with four games to play? What, now you need it? Now you have a different defensive coordinator in addition to a different offensive coordinator, who are both different than the people who called the plays at the start of last year. Now you have, what, a special teams coach as your head coach? What's accomplished by that? I think the goal, if you're the Bears, is to try and provide a stable environment for Caleb Williams here in the last, 2 months of the season. And the hope is that Caleb Williams takes off with it. And then you make a decision, by the time that last game ends, is whether this is going in the right direction. I'm thinking it's not. I mean, my guess is that Matt Eberflus doesn't get to hire another offensive coordinator. So kind of his only way out of this thing is if Caleb gets so good that that the powers that be look around and go, well, we can't get rid of Matt, we can't get rid of Thomas Brown, this thing is just on the right trajectory. And, with every game that passes, I think that becomes more and more unlikely.
Patrick, you and I spoke 2 weeks ago, and I asked you somewhat of a similar question, and you said that one of the things that Matt Eberflus can do really, really well to hold on to his job is coach that defense up. What have you made of the way that his defense has played the last couple of weeks? They seem to be really struggling from a pass rush standpoint.
It's so funny because you watch the games and you go, this defense is getting its butt kicked. And then you look at the stats, and it's not horrible. I mean, they gave up 20 points to the Packers and 19 points to the Patriots. And boy, they felt like, in many cases, one of the worst units in the game, in both of those games. They really do miss Andrew Billings. Andrew Billings, their nose tackle, had developed a pass rush in the last year and a half that was really useful in them getting some push from the middle there. Montez Sweat being hurt is really hurting them as well. He didn't play against the Cardinals, and then he's just, he was limited the last two games. So as he gets healthy, that'll work. We talked to DeMarcus Walker. He's starting to get a little more faith, I believe, in his wrist, which had been banged up earlier. So some health will help there. And remember, too, with Kyler Gordon back now, Eberflus has got kind of his favorite blitz guy back. And that was hard to do when you're running out of second string nickel corner. So maybe he'll have to get a little more creative here if they want to get a pass rush against the Vikings.
How concerned should we be about Jaquan Brisker?
Oh, very.
Yeah.
And it's not, I'm not a medical expert by any stretch, but we all know Jaquan and we all want what's best for Jaquan in his life. And, when you have a concussion that's going to keep him out at least 10 weeks, like, good Lord, like that's scary. And it's scary for a lot of reasons, one of which being that he's had a concussion in the NFL in his previous two seasons as well. So now you're looking at three, and this one is a very, very bad one. I hope that he can clear protocol, because the reason he got put on IR last week is because he was getting worse. You know, they were taking steps backwards. That's scary. You know, and once he clears protocol, then you can have a decision about kind of the best way to go forward. Jaquan loves football. I can't imagine Jaquan wants to do anything other than play football. But, boy, if this is somebody who is a family member or loved one of yours, boy, it would keep me up at night if it was my child, if it was my friend, if it was my brother. I don't know that I'd be able to sleep, because this is really bad, scary stuff.
Yeah, Tua Tagovailoa, his concussions, they were, I'm using air quotes, but they were much scarier on the field with what they mm-hmm. looked like. And he's a quarterback, obviously, so we just talk about quarterbacks more. The difference between the two is Tua takes the field with security guards, right? Yeah. He takes the field yeah. and then looks to avoid said contact. When Jaquan Brisker goes back out on a football field, his job is to create the contact. So those are two very different things. An NFL safety that moves at the speed at which he moves at, and an NFL quarterback who is built for security.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I will point out that Tommy Tremble, the tight end for the Panthers, actually hit him.
Yeah.
And Tremble had a concussion, but Tremble was fined the next weekend for leading with a helmet. So it's a rare case of he was actually receiving the blow instead of getting it.
Right.
But, you know,
it just tells you that anything can happen. The guy running towards contact like that.
Yes, and the position he plays, which is strong safety, is a position that puts a premium on violence and on being able to tackle. And you know, one of the things Matt Eberflus does really well is he teaches tackling at a granular level in a way that a lot of other teams don't. So, you know that he doesn't want you leading with the helmet, but, you know, sometimes it happens. And here's the scary thing for me, too, is I believe Jaquan has been diagnosed with a concussion after the fact, the last two times he's had one. Mm. And, you know, we just don't know enough about concussions to know whether it's safe to put somebody back in the game right away. I mean, he got concussed, you know, when Tremble hit him. You know, he kept playing, and then he didn't report symptoms until they were getting ready to get on a plane to go to London the next day. Like, boy, it's scary. We all wish the best for him. And boy, you know, when you get into brain injuries,
yeah.
it's just, we don't know enough about it to make intelligent decisions.
Patrick Finley on the beat of the Bears for the Chicago Sun-Times. Patrick, final one for you. Have you put much thought into this Vikings matchup on Sunday? We know what Brian Flores is all about. We know where the Bears have struggled this season. What's this going to look like offensively for the Bears?
Well, they're going to have to be creative. They're going to have to find a way for their rookie quarterback, who's literally never seen anything like this, to deal with it in real time. I look back at last year when, you know, we talked to Justin Fields and to Luke Getsy about, oh my God, what are you going to do against Brian Flores? He's going to come, you know, blitz your pants off. And I believe on the first play of the game at Soldier Field, the Bears went five wide. They put a fullback split wide and had him run a deep route. And Justin Fields took a snap and was blindsided by a sack about a second and a half into the play. So you can talk about it, you can acknowledge it, but you also need to do smart things in real time. It's going to be a real test for Thomas Brown. Like you said, there's film on Brown now of what he does with the Bears, but he's got to find a way to give his quarterback answers against a unusual defense that's been really, really good this year.
Patrick, awesome stuff as always. Always enjoy your work, and thanks for your time this evening.
Of course, of course. Have a good one.
There he is, Patrick Finley, Chicago Sun-Times. The Jaquan Brisker thing, yeah, it's three in a row or three consecutive with the concussions that he's had over the last three seasons. And you think about the position that he plays. We worry so much about quarterbacks always. We've worried so much about Tua Tagovailoa. The decision for Tua to come back, remember the last concussion that Tua had, he very much could have just gone down and not fight for that extra yard. And we all would have applauded him and said, that's a great decision for Tua. With his past, with his concussion history, that's a great decision by him. I don't know how many times I've applauded Caleb Williams for going out of bounds or going down early and not just trying to get that extra yard. For number 18 for the Bears, I'm not trading a first down for a big hit. I don't care. I don't really want to trade a touchdown for a big hit. on Caleb Williams with how important it is for him to not only be out there, but continue to get reps. It is such a different conversation when you're sending your safety out there. Right, because this is supposed to be the position. This is supposed to be the guy. The reason why Jaquan Brisker is different than us, not only because of his physical attributes, but because he doesn't think about the consequences. Because he's willing to slam his body and do these things that a normal human may just say, I'm scared. I'm afraid. I'm afraid to do that. Jaquan is supposed to be the guy that isn't supposed to be afraid. He hasn't gotten as far as he's had in his career because he's been afraid. But at what point in time do you say, what I've been asked to do, what I'm going to be asked to do to go back out on the field with what I've felt over these last however many weeks from his concussion symptoms and the amount that he's had over his career, well, that he's going to be asked to do when he goes back out on the field, that's the real decision. We all knew Tua was coming back. Tua feels like a much easier decision than it is for an NFL safety versus a quarterback. What did we like most from Caleb Williams that we saw on Sunday? We'll tell you coming up next.
Four-man rush. Williams in trouble. Gets that out of one shot. Running for his life. Throws. Oh, it's a big catch. Not there yet, but it'll be a fourth and manageable. It's a Dunze.
Wow, what a play. Extending that to a Dunze and obviously play the game right here.
We're back with more Judson Richards on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Score listener line powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Judson Richards with you for just about another 10 minutes or so. DePaul basketball will take over from there. DePaul tipping off against Eastern Illinois just about 8 o'clock this evening. We'll have that for you on The Score. The Bulls will be on tomorrow night as well. One of the things we've been talking about this evening, the question we've asked you at 312-644-6767, phone lines are still open. The Bears-Packers game confirmed what for you? And we know the obvious one, right? We know the one that we all go to, that if you got a head coach that can't win a one-score game, which one thing the NFL does so well, the NFL doesn't provide drama week in, week out because it's a bunch of blowouts. The NFL operates, really, it seems like, in one-score games. More often than not, I'm often more surprised. Like, when you have a day that you're like, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to watch about every divisional round game in the playoffs, or I'm going to spend my entire Sunday stuffing my face and watching the conference championship games, damn it, they just deliver. And it's not because they're all blowouts. Every once in a while, you get a dog. I get it. But more often than not, you're playing one-score games. Matt Eberflus, 5-17 in one-score games. That is the worst in the NFL. The best in the NFL, that handsome, tall man, the head coach of the Minnesota Vikings, Kevin O'Connell, coming to town on Sunday with the 8-2 Vikings versus the 4-6 Bears. 312-644-6767. The Bears-Packers game confirmed what for you? Now, if you thought, it's a foregone conclusion, Matt Eberflus is just gone. Well, Dave Wanstead with Molly and Haw, this is what he had to say about Eberflus.
I still come back to that if Caleb can play the remainder of the season and make some headway from how he played Sunday, and how many games we got left? Nine?
No, seven.
Seven games. Okay, if we can win three or four.
They're not going to the playoffs.
Okay, we're not going to the playoffs. But if we could win, let's be optimistic. Let's say we won four, okay? You know, now we're going to sit there at eight, and Caleb made headway. I think Flus comes back.
Wow.
I really do.
Let's revisit that one.
Okay, we can revisit all we want. I'm just.
Yeah, no, that's interesting.
You know, a week ago I was on, it's Tuesday night, I was on a week ago when they fired Shane Waldron and they promoted new offensive coordinator Thomas Brown. And I said, Thomas Brown now has to save Matt Eberflus, right? It is now a guy that, to be honest, I mean, how many of you out there, even if you're big Bears fans, how many of you out there really knew the name of the Bears passing coordinator? Now, maybe you knew Thomas Brown because he was one of the nine that they interviewed for the offensive coordinator position in the offseason when they got to Waldron. But I thought Thomas Brown, Now a guy who only called plays in the NFL for a half a season for the Carolina Panthers and Bryce Young. Thomas Brown is going to save Eberflus' job. And guess what? I was wrong because Eberflus can't get out of his own way. Thomas Brown actually put Eberflus in a place to potentially save his job, to potentially grow a little bit more favor with ownership by beating the Packers, by breaking now the longest streak in the Bears-Packers rivalry history with 11 consecutive losses. Brown did his part. He actually did his part. And the Bears are not operationally sound yet again to go ahead and just kick a 46-yard field goal and go ahead and win it. 3-2-2-6-4-4-67-67. The Bears-Packers game confirmed what for you? The one positive for me is Jordan Love may end up having a very good NFL career. But I just don't think that we're going to have the concerns of going from Favre to Rodgers to another gold jacket. As of now that may be too soon to put on Jordan Love. He's been in the league for 5 years, but he's only in the midst of playing a season and a half as a regular starter. But if you thought they're going from Rodgers to another one who's going to be similar to Aaron Rodgers, I just don't think that that's the case. Because Aaron Rodgers did one thing better than anybody on almost the 15 years he led the Packers. He would slice you, dice you, and he would not put it in harm's way. His touchdown to interception ratio was phenomenal. 12 of the 15 years Aaron Rodgers led the Packers, he only had double digits interceptions on 3 of those years, and 2 of them were his first year and his last year as a starter. 12 of 15, single digits in interceptions. That's why he's winning MVPs. Jordan Love, 8 games this year, 11 interceptions. Last year, threw 11 interceptions. Aaron Rodgers does not throw that ball, does not turn it over in the end zone like Jordan Love did. So that was one confirmation that I had from that game. The other one is that the Bears are in trouble for quite some time because of Matt LaFleur. We watched him win with Malik Willis this year. He has the youngest roster yet again. It's like, didn't they get any older? They're like the Benjamin Button of the NFL. They were the youngest team last year, almost got to the NFC Championship game, and they're the youngest team yet again this year. What, are they just moved to 7-3? And the Packers have an incredibly bright head coach. I find it almost impossible. And I appreciate Dave Wannstedt's optimism. That's coach to coach. Right? That is former head coach knowing what it's like to be fired, knowing how difficult a job it is. None of us do behind these microphones have any idea about how difficult it is. But I also know how difficult the schedule is for the rest of the way for the Bears. And even when Thomas Brown is able to get this offense moving respectably, it still crumbles at the end.
I was going to say, if Matt Eberflus is still the head coach of the Chicago Bears next year, the Bears are in the playoffs. And the odds of that happening are very slim.
Slim to none.
If you look at the schedule, like my Detroit Lions, that's 2 games that I'm going to guess are 2 L's. Like, there is no way that you can confidently say, I love Dave. Dave is amazing. I love when he's on the show all the time. There's no way you can say Matt Eberflus is coming back unless they make the playoffs.
And I'll say this about Eberflus. If they do what you just said, Robbie, if they do make the playoffs, I will applaud the man and I will say, Matt Eberflus, you earned it, right? No one, if he is able to get Caleb Williams playing at the pace of running this gauntlet and getting to the playoffs, combined with the defense that he is calling said plays, if he makes that happen, then I will apologize to the man and say, Matt Eberflus, you earned it.
But that also means that Matt Eberflus does everything he usually doesn't do. Because that means somehow Matt Eberflus became a good head coach. And that means he makes all the right strategical moves. But he's shown no evidence of doing that. So that's why there's no way you can bring him back. Because if he does go all defeated, he goes against everything he believes in. Because you know how you say, like, hey, if you're doing something wrong, just do the opposite of what you would do. That's what Matt Eberflus should do.
Yeah, he should Costanza it the rest of the way. I you know, what you're saying, Robbie, is what we know to be fact more than anything else. And he is not going to automatically wake up, become a better head coach than Matt LaFleur. He's not going to become a better head coach than Kevin O'Connell. He's not going to become a better head coach than Dan Campbell. And he's not going to be a better head coach than Kyle Shanahan. All of those coaches are still in front of him. But the biggest takeaway from today's show, really for me, is because last week and even over the last few weeks, I felt like the NFL world was throwing a little bit of pity towards Caleb Williams' way, right? That the Bears are failing Caleb Williams, that the Bears are ruining Caleb Williams. But the problem with talking about pity is if Caleb wants to be as great as he says he wants to be, the guy who actually challenged Tom Brady's 7 rings, which I don't think he would do now after feeling what it's like even through 10 games of an NFL season. But if he believes that greatness is in front of him, that greatness has no time for victimhood. And whoever the next head coach is, whether it's at the end of this season, maybe it's at the end of next season, and whoever the next offensive coordinator is for the Bears, whoever they end up hiring, there is no guarantee that they're going to be the best at their job. There is no guarantee that Caleb Williams is going to have perfection in front of him from the brightest minds of head coach, offensive coordinator, even general manager. Right? So let's save the pity on Caleb Williams. I liked what he said about the phone call with Lincoln Riley. Now, it felt a little bit like he was talking out of school and going around his head coach to go and talk to his old head coach. But still, the advice is solid. Keep going. Keep going. If you thought that Shane Waldron ruined Caleb Williams over 7, 8 games, 9 games, then you didn't think that much of Caleb Williams. But if you are going to take the torch and turn the page on the woeful quarterback play over the last number of decades here in the fine city of Chicago, then whoever that guy is going to have to overcome something. That guy is going to have to rise above something. We kind of use Tom Brady as the comparison in the show. Maybe the best comparison about overcoming something for greatness should have been the real GOAT in Michael Jordan. We all watched The Last Dance. What were Michael Jordan's teammates doing in those hotel rooms when he was a rookie in Chicago? Right? I mean, they were all partying their faces off. And guess what? He didn't go in those rooms and he found a way to be great. And Caleb Williams, for me, quite simply, if he wants to take the torch and be the greatest one, he's going to have to figure out at some point. I know he's a rookie right now. That's too young to put on him. But greatness should have absolutely no time for victimhood. And I felt like we were going down that path a little bit. The best advice that he got from Lincoln Riley, just keep going. Thank goodness for Thomas Brown. But even a smart offensive coordinator can't save Matt Eberflus from Matt Eberflusing his way all the way through it. Thanks to Robbie Trown. Did a great job. Robbie, I appreciate it. Thanks to Eric Edholm, who joined us. If you missed anything today, Eric Edholm joined us at 6:25 from NFL.com. Talked a lot about coaching vacancies potentially and who may be hired this upcoming offseason. Patrick Finley, the Bears beat for the Chicago Sun-Times. Patrick joins us at 7 o'clock. You can find it all with the Rewind function on the Odyssey app. Look forward to hearing from Zach Saban. We got DePaul basketball coming up next on 670 The Score.